This is WPR, where it's time for the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin to come alive in conversation on the radio. This is Spectrum West. Hi, everybody. I'm Al Ross. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to Dar Williams. That is, if you've never met, as in heard her music or read her writing. We'll hear her sing and talk about her book that mentions Eau Claire and Madison. Then it's Jim, Jim, and Jane, as in Oliver and Jeffries, a conversation about a play and a podcast. Nobu is in the house. Nobu Yasuda, music director of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra, on topics like the upcoming season, the first concert of that season, and more. Jim Oliver takes us to theater companies and venues around Western Wisconsin with a look at what's playing. And we begin with the well-known fact that spring and fall are seasons of art studio tours. It being fall, the Falling Leaves Tour is about to present itself for the 14th time, having been initiated by accomplished artist Roseanne Henning. Chris Crow is also an artistic contributor and this year steps in as spokesperson. So what's discussed when you look back and then you look ahead? Always to be better, to be bigger, or what do you do?
Well, I don't know that it's always going to be bigger, but it is very consistent. Mm-hmm. We have been aiming for kind of the same time of year, although there's some discussion about changing that a little. But I guess what I like about it is that there's always some new people on the tour, but then there's some people that have been on the tour for a while. And as I was going through it, I was looking, oh, darn, because when you're on the tour yourself, then you don't get to go see everybody else's.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
unless you can find someone so you can sneak out for a little bit. But mm-hmm. there's a couple interesting things here that I would like to go see. So someday I might not do it, and then I'd go check out the tour.
Yeah, and because you have the guts to be on the radio, we are going to talk about what you do. That's one of the perks for saying, sure, I'll be on the radio. How are these things arranged? It's obviously a big opportunity for artists to sell their wares. Does a percentage go to marketing the tour? How do you arrange?
No, everybody pays a flat rate to be in the tour. So then that money goes towards the printing of the brochures and mm-hmm. the mailing and any other expenses.
We should point out to people that it's free and it is self-guided. It is Saturday and Sunday, September 30th and October 1st. People who are listening and may have gone on the tour before are kind of familiar with it. People who are new to the tour can get all the information they need at the website. And because you are on the radio, we're going to talk about what you do. But rather than listing everybody who's on the tour, let's mention who's new, because you have three new people.
I know two of the new ones.
It's not. I don't think it's a person. It's the Dells Mill that's the third.
Oh, okay.
That's the third
entity.
That's
why I was confused. The Dells Mill will be an interesting stop, having Amish baked goods and things like this. But Roseanne Henning, at her studio, she has a guest artist, and that's Amy and Jeremy Trainer. Yeah. And they do birdhouses, bird feeders, planters out of reclaimed wood and Lake Superior rocks and driftwood.
The way I have it listed here is Barry Delberto, he's a basket case, because actually he does baskets, right? That's my clever side.
Huh? Barry Delberto is from Tall Pine Studio, and he does the handmade baskets of wild grapevines and birch bark. Mm-hmm. And he will be at the Dells Mill School.
Oh, at the school.
At the yes. Dells Mill School.
So Dells Mill is one entity, Dells
right.
Mill School is another.
Yes.
Okay. And the Dells Mill, as you mentioned, is an Amish entity now, and they mm-hmm. are participating, as you might guess, on Saturday only. Chris Crow is in the studio with us. We're talking the 14th Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour. The hours are 10 to 6 on Saturday, 10 to 5 on Sunday. The tour includes 15 locations, 27 artists. I said Barry's a basket case, and you are out of your gourd. So tell us what you do.
Well, I think I am out of my gourd when I sit outside all summer trying to carve on my porch. But I take gourds.
Do you grow them?
I do not grow them. You're the just... ones that grow around here are kind of thin, so they're not really conducive to that. I do carve some of the thinner ones, but there's a gourd guy near Madison. Okay. So I like to go down there and get those.
Certain kind of gourd has the thickness to it?
It really has to do with the growing season. The really good ones are in the southern states, Arizona Kentucky. They are quite thick, in fact. They're like wood.
You carve them? You carve something on the skin?
Well, I carve right through them.
Oh, you do?
So I usually cut off the tops and clean them all out, and then we paint them and do different things to them, and then carve some sort of design into the
board. Are they dry when you get them, or do you?
Yes, they have to be dry. They have to be seasoned for about a year, and then they're totally ready to be.
And that's done already when you get them. You don't dry them.
I don't dry them. They usually leave them laying out in the field. If I get them from down south, they clean them. If I get them from other places, I have to clean them myself. And that means going and scrubbing off all the moldy skin and stuff until you get to the beauty of it, to the beauty of the gourd.
What inspired you to become a gourd person?
I was listening to public radio one day.
Smart lady.
And the gourd girl was on. She was talking about it and said that she teaches classes near the Madison area. And then someone called in and said, would you come to them? And so I called her and talked to her, and she came up and taught a class to a group of my friends and myself. She wanted to know if we wanted to do leaf bowls or flowers, and I said, we wanted to do both. Everybody else made one, but no one else has kept up with it like I have.
I have the brochure in front of me, and just scanning to give people an idea of how much variety there is artistically. There's alpacas.
Yes, that's the first spot.
Weaving kind of thing. There's character drawings. There is wildlife photography, pottery, carvings of different kinds. That's probably, this is
ceramics,
out of driftwood.
Glass.
Yes, ceramics and
paper and clay,
oil paintings. Mm-hmm. Yes, we can just go back and forth here. I see jewelry.
A lot of fiber arts. It's got a lot of variety, and I think you can pick these up at most businesses. We've been dropping them off as many places as we can think in the area, from Chippewa to Osseo and Eau Claire and, of course, Augusta and Fairchild.
Orange is the theme of your tour, has been from the beginning. The back of the brochure has a giant map. In fact, the entire brochure, once it's opened, is a map with all of the keys and the locations. Not only is the brochure orange is also the theme for the signage that people will see when they're out driving around.
Big orange leaves.
The website is fallingleavesarttour.com. If you want more information than what Chris and I have been able to disseminate in our short time here on Spectrum West, Saturday and Sunday, September 30th and October 1st.
It's kind of like a little road trip. The leaves are changing, so they're going to see some scenery besides the great art.
So look for the leaves and the arrows. Chris Crow, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Again, the website is fallingleavesarttour.com. Coming up, Dar Williams sings and talks about her very engaging book. Jim Oliver connects with the Jeffries. But first, some of the many stages in West Wisconsin are busy, and that same Jim Oliver tells us which ones and what's playing.
Thank you, sir. Pride and Prejudice will be staged by the Barron Spotlighters September 29th and 30th, October 1st and 5th and 6th and 7th at the Barron Area Community Center. Mother, Can I Please Stop Knitting, a musical review, songs and stories of knitting during the World War, will be presented Saturday and Sunday at the St. Croix Art Barn in Osceola. The Old Gem Theater in New Richmond will stage Johnny Appleseed for groups, weekdays beginning Monday and continuing to October 20th. Magic Treehouse Nights at Dawn will be presented September 29th and 30th and October 1st at the Northern Star Theater in Rice Lake. The Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson will stage the Savannah Sipping Society weekends through October 1st. Also in Hudson, Come Blow Your Horn will continue weekends through October 28th at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater. And the Eau Claire Children's Theater has scheduled auditions for Annie. Youth auditions will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday. Adult auditions will be held at 7 p.m. on Monday. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, with the all-wheel drive RAV4, an SUV committed to reliability. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or marquardttoyota.com. Support also comes from Caradori Pottery, celebrating over 30 years of art in the Chippewa Valley with a show representing potters with over 30 years of experience, September 30th, 10 to 4 at Caradori Pottery in Eau Claire. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. Don't forget the final days of Chippewa Valley Restaurant Week. ChippewaValleyRestaurantWeek.com is where all the details are. Well, the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra celebrates the beginning of yet another season, and it's the 25th for music director Nobu Yoshida. We invited him to stop by for a preview, but a conversation with him often includes other interesting observations. You started the violin at age 3. Do you remember playing the violin at 3 years old?
I don't really remember when I was 3, but one memory I have, probably that was like when I was 4 years old.
Okay.
I'm playing violin on stage.
Mm.
So I just have this memory of I'm on stage. Because probably as a kid, probably it was incredibly, I don't know, how do I say that? Because, you know, usually you don't really stand in front of many people, right?
Oh, no, yeah.
But I was a kid standing in front of lots of people.
Mm. Nervous, maybe. Huh?
Not really. You see, when kids learn something, it's like automatic. So you just play whatever you learned. So then probably I was kind of looking around why there are so many people. Looking at me.
And they applauded?
After that, probably. I don't remember the part, actually.
So was the Suzuki method born in Japan?
It was born, right, because Mr. Suzuki actually started. However...
Did you take that?
No. The thing is, actually, my teacher really did not use Suzuki method. However, he used the book.
Okay.
It's because Suzuki book is incredibly well organized because from the beginning, you know, of the lesson, you can actually play some kind of a melody. Probably the most famous one is da 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 dum bum ba 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 bum. But you can start with the open string, and you just use one finger, and then you learn to use your bow.
Yeah.
Suzuki method is actually not bad as long as you know teacher actually eventually teach how to read music. I really think that basically learning from listening to your sound is actually a good idea because some people just. You know, look at, especially, this actually probably it's more of a for adults. When adults actually look at the notes, you know, printed notes, and then, they just try to play something, you know, but they don't necessarily really listen carefully. Uh-huh. Music is all about sound, right? So if you can't really hear your intonation or even tone quality or even tempo, rhythm, I mean, basically, it doesn't mean anything.
So how much do you play your violin today? Do you play it every day?
Not today, but yesterday I did play probably 2 hours.
How about other instruments? What else do you play? No?
I touch piano a little bit sometimes. I mean, you know, I study scores.
Yes.
They pretty much actually I can really hear everything, so I don't really need a keyboard or anything. But sometimes, you know, when I play some kind of a contemporary music, it has a very sophisticated kind of a harmony. I try to really just kind of lay those harmony or notes on the piano and I need to hear those things.
In the studio with Nobu, he is the musical director of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra, and we're about to embark on giving you an idea of what the 2017 and 2018 season is like. It's the final season at the State Theater. How do you feel about that?
It's actually
bittersweet.
I mean, right, nostalgic in a way with the excitement of course, moving to the new concert hall. I've been talking to many people who basically, you know, who have grown up in this town.
Yes.
And for those people, you know, their fond memory of going to some kind of a theater event or any kind of concerts, everything happened in the State Theater.
Yes.
So they really feel like, new concert hall is fine, but is there any way we can preserve? And if so we can do something like that. I mean, if we can do something, that would be nice too.
It begins your season October 21st with something that's listed as one of the most romantic symphonies of all time, Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 6, Pathetique. Is it listed as one of the most romantic symphonies because of the period it was penned in or
because the music itself. So what makes it romantic? I'm thinking to myself, this one would be a great concert to take somebody you love to. Should we anticipate some tingling, some passion, some desire? What's going on with this thing?
I mean, you know, why this is the most romantic concert probably ever, how we think about it. First,
yes.
Tchaikovsky is the composer. His music is just full of, I mean, emotion, feeling. I mean, especially he felt that his life was just a succession of misery and tragedy.
Really?
Even he was a very successful composer at the time. He was really famous, popular. Everybody loved his music because of probably at the time, I think the period of when Tchaikovsky lived, mm-hmm. that was the almost the kind of peak of the romanticism also. So every actually composer, music composers, or even painters, and probably even the writers, I mean, they were really looking for some or seeking their way to express their emotion and feeling, pouring out, you know, their emotion. Mm-hmm. That was the time. And also, this piece, Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 6, became his last piece ever.
Cool.
He wrote this piece, and he conducted this piece, and 9 days later, he ended his life by himself. So in this music, you can really hear his longing, his dream, his suffering, his problem.
Does it sound like there's an end coming when you hear
this? You can say that. This music really ends with incredible, like a kind of a palpitation, heartbeat. Boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, wow.
Like that. But at the same time, third movement is incredibly, in a way, full of hope. But somehow I feel very kind of capricious, means that he's somehow making fun of this positive side of almost his life. Sounds like it. Oh. And then there's actually the waltz movement. In the second movement, like this. Waltz is usually 3 beats, but this is 5
yes.
beats.
Oh, yeah, sure.
1, 2, 3, 5. Oh. So then I'm like, what is this? It actually sounds like a waltz, very comfortable waltz, but something is distorted.
Hmm.
Right.
He was playing with the walls.
Right. If you just simply listen to it, you don't really notice that this has 5 beats. It's so simple. But it's not a simple 3 beats.
Oh, wow.
If you try to dance, probably then you realize, oops.
And only a guy like Tchaikovsky could do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're focusing on him so much, we're forgetting about Schubert's.
Schubert.
Because you have another symphony, number 7, the Unfinished Symphony.
Right. Maybe this can tell you also another story.
Yes.
He was writing. He got in lots of ideas. He only finished up to the second movement. And actually, he was writing a third movement, but he couldn't finish it. And in Schubert's case, actually, this was not the very last piece. But before he finished this symphony, he died. He was 31 years old, young man when he died.
What a concert.
Both of them really lived in their fantasy and longing.
I want to mention some of the other concerts in the season. We don't have time to expound on them, but December 9th, you have a very special holiday concert. You're going to have the voices of children involved in that. January 13th, the Christo Young Artist Competition Concert happens at Gantner Concert Hall. February 10th, Movie Lovers Extravaganza, Youth Symphony, and the Christo Winter play at that. That's a late afternoon concert at the State Theater. March 3rd, Landscape Lullabies. I had a question about that, but we'll save that question for when you and I talk prior to the March concert. How about that? And that's going to be the peak of nostalgia because that's the final concert for the symphony at the State because your May concert's at Gantner. Is what's planned for the March concert special because it's the last one at the State?
Yeah, just we wanted to feature nature. I mean, Eau Claire, if you really realize, we have a wonderful nature, like today.
We do.
Of course, now leaves are changing color. Sure. That's another beauty here. And also we have nice rivers. And so we start the concert with Moldau. Moldau is Smetana, actually wrote about the the Moldau River, Moldau.
Okay.
Has a lot of actually kind of his love for his native country, Czech. And then the second piece, actually, not second piece, but this big piece, actually, Dvořák Symphony No. 7. Dvořák from Czech. And also, I feel, you know, every time I hear this symphony, first movement, somehow I just get the image of forest.
Oh.
I don't know why. Mm. It's just, this is really a nature symphony to me.
Okay. And you'll mention that to people, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
When
sure.
you're up there. Have you been driving or walking through downtown a lot, watching the theater go up?
Yep.
That's just exciting, isn't
that it? That was only a few days ago. I was actually standing at the river of the Phoenix Park, so basically across the river from that conference hall.
Yeah.
I was actually standing for a while, already, you know, getting some image of we are performing in there.
I was just going to ask if you did. Yeah.
Even 26 years ago, I have to say that, I was thinking about this new hall. I couldn't see the outside, of course, but I was already talking about this one. I was already seeing that we are performing in a really nice concert hall.
Mm-hmm.
So now I already see this outside. It's already there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of we are getting there to perform. I'm very excited about it.
And we're excited to see you there. Mm-hmm. Nobu, thanks for being with us as usual. We're looking forward to your first concert of the season. It's October 21st. It's at 7:30 p.m. and it's at the State Theater. Again, the final concert season for the symphony at the State Theater. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I can picture that too. Nobu on stage with the symphony at the new place. Pretty cool. We'll talk with Dar Williams about her book that provides a unique perspective of life on the road as a singer. That's just down our road. For now on Spectrum West, Jim Oliver's back, and this week he welcomes the writing team that's always busy and exceptional.
Jane and Jim Jeffries are a couple of educators in Eau Claire who have been writing and producing Madrigal dinner scripts since 1995. Now, they have three children who have performed with them at the Wisconsin Renaissance Fair and who have appeared in some of their Madrigal plays. Their daughter, Claire, who holds a B.A. in English Creative Writing from UW-Eau Claire, now writes shows as a member of the family company. In addition to Madrigal dinners, the Jeffries also write more conventional plays, and their next offering is entitled An Innocent Affair, presented by In the Light Theater Company, which is their theater company. It will be staged Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, September 28th, 29th, and 30th on the Valley Brook stage, 420 South Barstow Street. So tell me about the play.
The play is based upon an author that I like a whole lot. His name is G.K. Chesterton. A lot of people may know him because on PBS right now is the Father Brown Mysteries, and he wrote the Father Brown Mysteries. Incredibly quotable author. But what we really like is his view on marriage. And so we took one of his books about marriage and we used his idea, but we wrote the play.
Now, this is a comedy, right?
It's a comedy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can always make all kinds of comic things out of.
Oh, marriage is you got to have a sense of humor and a lot of courage for marriage.
Well, who are the principal actors in this show?
Well, I think Jane will take this one.
Innocent Smith, the lead role, he's a crazy character who shows up to visit some of his college friends. And he's played by Jake Pritchard. And he meets a woman named Mary Gray, played by Grace Nichols. He's fallen head over heels in love with her, and you find out later in the play she's a married woman. Meanwhile, he's been preaching a lot of things about love and romance, and there are two other couples involved. There's Arthur and Diana. Kyle Miller is Arthur, and Jan Davidson is Diana. And then you have Rose, who's a rich heiress, and she thinks that everybody just wants to date her because of her money. So that's played by Natalia Bartelt, and her husband, Matt Bartelt, is playing opposite her. His character is Michael, and he's, an alternative newspaper guy. He doesn't have a lot of money, and he's trying to convince Rose he just loves her for who she is. So you have these couples with their baggage, and Innocent comes in, and he's casting these great visions about love and romance, and then Arthur gets pretty mad at him when he sees him flirting with a married woman. And then there are two other characters, Kyle Schmittendorf, the jilted lover. He's actually looking for a guy, and he's hired a private detective. And so this is played by Ian Jeffries and his wife, Lauren Jeffries. And yes, they're related to us. So they have a lot of fun, too. But they're coming in trying to track down this guy in the midst of all this other stuff that's happening.
And there's also Professor Smothers, played by Kevin
Derzakowski.
Thanks for pronouncing that for me.
He's a professor over at UW-Stout, one of my friends. He's great.
He's a philosophy professor in the play.
You've done this a lot, so this is kind of a silly question, just for those of us who've never written a play. Is it any different from your magical shows?
It's usually the same process. Usually, not always, but usually Jane starts writing the play. She finishes at a certain point, and then I take a look at what she did and add some to that, and then I try to advance it a few more pages. And we just go back and forth. Usually we're working on two plays at the same time. I'm working on one, she's working on the other, and then we switch.
So the only thing I'd say that's different from the Madrigal plays, we have a rough idea and figure it out as we go. But I think these other plays, we have a, you know, an ending that we're aiming for, you know, clearly a message that we want to get across. Easier to write it that way.
So you say there's a message to get across. Explain what you mean by that.
I'm not sure I would say a message to get across, but a story to tell. You know, there are common themes that every person, you know, experiences, the fear of loneliness, the fear of failure, and everybody's touched by this. And what do you do with that? Loneliness and failure play a big role in this play because that's what's driving a lot of these characters. They don't want to be alone, but they're fearful to make commitments and, you know, the heartache that that could lead to.
We are talking to Jane and Jim Jeffries, Eau Claire playwrights. You've also recently partnered with Blue Gold Radio and the Chippewa Valley Writers Guild to start out in a different medium. Talk about your upcoming podcast.
I'll take this one. It's kind of in the idea of old-time radio, so we're doing some local history scripts. These are all stories that are based in fact. We've had to flesh out some of the details, so, you know, in order to make a script, you have to do that. And sometimes you just don't have a lot of information, so you have to kind of reimagine, okay, well, how did this go exactly? But, wow, there are some great stories in history, just local history around here. Sort of unbelievable. It's like, wow, we can't make up stuff this good.
Like Ella the elephant was buried just 50 yards away from our house. And the cave lady is just about a quarter mile away from our house. And a lot of help from Chippewa Valley Museum. Did the research and then just, like Jane said, filled in the details.
We'd also like to give some credit to Eau Claire Community Foundation. We got part of the grant from them to write this.
You've written and directed 6 episodes. Are there more coming after that? Or what's
depends on how the first 6 are received.
Yeah, I noticed in one of the, I was looking at some of the local media coverage of the podcasts, and I think, Jane, you were quoted as saying something about people question why to study history and so forth. And having always enjoyed history and liked history a lot, I never totally understood why somebody didn't like history. But so why should we even care about history?
Well, I'm a history teacher. In my American history class, our last unit was on local history. And the students had to do something creative about local history. They were pretty ignorant about local history, and then when they started getting into it, they were really fascinated by what they found. And I think if you know especially your local history, a connectedness, a feeling of roots, commonality that everybody in the community holds together, which is, I think, really important.
From my own personal experience, I think local history is something that is often neglected. I grew up in the country alongside of a creek called Battle Brook. There are all kinds of legends about how Battle Brook was named. I've looked ever since trying to find actually someone who is perhaps researched, and I can't find anything. I understand that my one-time teacher actually wrote his master's thesis on Battle Brook, but one of his children has it in her attic somewhere and can't find the original. So I suspect I'm going to my grave.
It's really easy. Knowing. All you got to do is look it up on Wikipedia.
There you are.
It has everything.
Yes, I know. I honestly, I've tried. So how many episodes?
6 altogether. The last one will be broadcast live.
Performed live at the Plus downtown.
I assume that these have different size casts.
Oh, yeah.
Most casts are, what, 6 to 8?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We doubled up some people, but I think we had about 30-some people involved.
Talk about the research that you had to do on this. You mentioned the Chippewa Valley Museum. How much time did it take to build this series of podcasts?
Quite a few hours.
Yeah.
Quite a few. We wrote one about some German pacifists. It was a family here, you know, German origin, but this is right around World War I. They're pacifists, and it ended up in a gunfight because, you know, they hadn't signed up for the draft. But there was a book written on this one and, you know, information from the Chippewa Valley Museum. But in that case, it was almost too much information because you want to be accurate, but you also have 30 minutes to kind of cover a lot of territory. And so that one I found actually kind of hard to write. But then what was the one that had the least amount of information, would you say?
I would say Ella the Elephant.
Yeah. You know, I mean, when we first moved to Eau Claire and living on the East Hill, people would always talk about there's an elephant buried somewhere on the East Hill, which we thought was just fascinating. So in this case, we went to also the public library to microfilm.
Yeah, microfilm is my friend. I've spent a lot of time down there.
You know, the turn of the century articles are so colorful. They'll give you details you just wouldn't get today in newspapers. I mean, it's just amazing what they added in. And so, you know, yeah, we researched that and then, you know, tried to figure out what kind of themes do we want to bring in. Like, I don't think people understood how hard it was for circus people. I mean, you have these great shows coming in, but they were living hand to mouth. And one disaster, an elephant dying, for instance, was, you know, pretty significant for them.
What was the deal with Ella the Elephant, since you brought her up?
Yeah, I looked her up at the newspaper, the microfilm, and she was pretty famous. They said bicycle, but actually she could ride a tricycle, and they were getting ready to perform down in the Third Ward, and she was struck by lightning.
Really bad storm came up.
Another person in the tent was burned by lightning. Another person was knocked out of his shoes.
Mm.
But Ella was the only fatality, but she was the star of the circus.
Mm.
So it was quite a blow. They buried her at first in the Third Ward without her feet. Elephant feet were considered a delicacy, so they shipped the feet to New York. And she was dug up, and then they reburied her 50 yards from her house.
Near the old Tim's Dairy, like right next door. Crazy. Well, yes.
Well, we've been talking to Jane and Jim Jeffries, or is it Jim and Jane Jeffries? Whoever. They're educators and creators of Madrigal Dinner scripts, and they're playwrights. Their current endeavors include An Innocent Affair, which is being produced September 28th, 29th, and 30th at the Valley Brook Stage on Barstow Street. The couple wrote and directed 6 episodes for a new podcast called Wisconsin History Theater in partnership with Blue Gold Radio and the Chippewa Valley Writers Guild. It will air at 7 p.m. Saturdays starting October 7th on Blue Gold Radio 99.9 FM.
Thank you, Jim Oliver, as usual. This is Spectrum West on WPR. And support for WPR comes from Visit Winona, offering Shakespeare to bike trails to bluegrass. The city has a wide assortment of entertainment options, a trip planner, and events calendar available at visitwinona.com. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gift ideas, space for events, home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery and fair trade gifts. More at simply-dunn.com.
Yeah, there was a time I didn't like the love, I like a climber. There was no sister then, it's running out of time and one line. And I was afraid, like you are when you're too young to know the time. And so I watched the way you take your fear and hoard the horizon point. You have a word for everyone you can lay your eyes on, like you own, just because you bought the time. And you turn to me, you say, you hope I'm not threatened. Oh, 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 I'm not that petty.
That's the up-tempo side of Dar Williams. There are others, the funny, the thoughtful, the brooding,
But let's go back to that word thoughtful, because it best describes all the songs that she writes. She's a master lyricist. So I guess it should come as no surprise that she's also written a very good book, a thoughtful book, a book designed not just to make us think, but to get us up off our best intentions to do many of the best things we think about, like making life better where we live for as many of us as possible. I ordered the book, and after absorbing it, I had to talk to this complicated and comfortable lady, Dar Williams. Well, let's get to know the singer first before we move on to the book. I'm a big fan of The New Yorker. I get it every week. So when it says you're one of America's very best singer-songwriters, I believe them. And that's got to make you feel good. Tell us about the dues that you've paid to become as good as you are.
The dues? You know what? I drove around by myself for a long time. And that was enough for this booking agent that took me on to book me, which was great. You know, they said, you're really green, but we see that you've got the right attitude. And then they sent me around alone in my car for a bunch of years, too, opening for other people. And they said, we've never done a contract for a tip jar gig before, but that was in La Crosse, Wisconsin, actually. Yeah. So it was a lot of crisscrossing and small gigs, which I loved.
A lot of entertainers, though, feel they're paying dues until they get to the stadium circuit. But you prefer the other smaller places.
I do. I love them all. I mean, it's all exciting. But, you know, what I see and what I know of the world comes from, you know, at the beginning, unfolding the folding chairs with the volunteers at the beginning of the show. I mean, if the show was going to happen, I had to acknowledge the fact that I was really the performing part of the team that was putting together a show for the first time in a city or a town. And I got to know those people doing those things. So that's a whole life that I get to have that I wouldn't have in the more sort of anonymous, established theaters.
And there's all kinds of folding chairs, aren't there?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Some of them are tough to figure out how to open those suckers.
It's not my forte.
Nah, me neither. You're also kind of accomplished on the guitar. In fact, quite accomplished on the guitar. Alternate tunings and finger picking and stuff. Is that a pretty important component to who you are on stage, your guitar?
That's really nice of you to say. I would say, compared to my peers, it is not my strength.
I've watched some YouTube stuff. You're proficient, more than proficient.
I'm proficient. I think that that's a good word.
Yeah.
And it's great because, you know, what I tell people who are learning is that you can do a lot with a little. I have an ex-boyfriend who said, you know, how you improve on guitar is to write songs that you can't play and then learn how to play them. And that helped a lot. I started with the songs.
You write so many different kinds of songs. I was pleasantly surprised to dive into the Dar Williams songbook a little bit. Do you think variety when you're writing a song, like I need to have this much playfulness and this much tenderness and this much comment in my songbook, or you just write as it comes?
I write as it comes, and I lead a songwriting retreat called Writing a Song That Matters. And one of my big things is it comes to you. And we have a whole morning of different kinds of ways of being contemplative. You sit there with an empty page and see if you can what you might fill it up with. Mm-hmm. Then you have to walk it around when you think you're losing your mind and pick up your instrument for a half an hour, see what that feels like. You know, my big joke is that I don't write every day. I try to court inspiration every day. And so inspiration really comes in its own packages.
On the phone with Dar Williams, singer, songwriter, and author, book, What I Found in 1,000 Towns, A Traveling Musician's Guide to Rebuilding America's Communities, One Coffee Shop, Dog Run, and Open Mic Night at a Time. That's quite a title. The Power of Positive Proximity could also be listed as the subtitle of the book. Proximity in human terms can immediately kind of feel uncomfortable, invading my space, lack of elbow room, claustrophobia. But when you add the word positive, it's a whole new tone, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you really got it. That's really the theme of the book, is this term I coined called positive proximity. And it's a decision that we make internally. I mean, sometimes we don't realize we did so, but we experience the proximity of other people around us, the closeness of people around us, you know, living in cities or pedestrian towns or even spread out towns. But this understanding that the people around us, we experience them as the people who will help us live our lives. Local governments, local projects, and ways that we contribute and that we feel we belong and we feel taken care of are a positive, constructive, mobilizing force. in towns that have a feel of high positive proximity are the ones that do the fun things. And I saw that this call was coming from Eau Claire today. And Eau Claire is in the book because somebody told me that, you know, that they were cleaning up the river more and clearing off some more space for parks. And I said, and I bet that you're having more festivals and things like that. And he said, yeah, it's true. There is going to be some music down by the river. And then as I talk about in the book, I was walking before a concert and looked down and saw all of these people on floaties coming down the river. That's the kind of thing when you have increasing positive proximity, a kind of a sense of what can happen in your city. The river's clean now. Why don't we jump into our floaties and go floating down the river every night in the summer? It's almost like towns are like people to me. People sort of awaken to their identities and integrate them, and it's a wonderful thing to see.
Well, there's a lot more to tell, Dar. Are you ready? Because on page 78 of your book, you begin a segment, and you were alluding to it, entitled Cultural Convergence at the Waterfront, which is where on the next page you mention Eau Claire, the use of the river. But there's a whole another phenomenon happening in Eau Claire right now. It's getting state and national publicity. It's that Eau Claire is doing exactly what Dar Williams recommends we do, find ways to move down the road together, paving that road with better scenery. I would suggest you come back to Eau Claire and witness the cultural outbreak. And the reason I mentioned cultural convergence at the waterfront is because a jewel in our positive proximity crown is a new performing arts center that's going up as we speak where the Eau Claire and the Chippewa Rivers meet.
I am so not surprised. I have to tell you something. There's this thing that I call the Byron Town, B-Y-R-E-N, buy your real estate now. And Eau Claire was one of them because the last time I was there, I saw the people floating down the river and I heard about more space for people at the river. And then I was also noticing that there was a reading or an art gallery talk at the space right next to the space where I was performing. And I thought, oh, look at all this cross-pollination of audio, visual. And then there were some, I think, sidewalk altering projects of some tree planting. And I thought, oh, this is that energy. I'm feeling the energy in the air. This is what's happening right now in Eau Claire. Something is on the move with the way that this downtown is kind of coming up and all this life is coming into this part of town, not just the cool college part of town with all those great breakfast cafes that I stop in on my trips. So I am not surprised, but I am very, very pleased.
Yeah, and I can very easily imagine Dar Williams standing on the stage of the brand new Confluence Art Center someday talking about the vision that she had.
I'm very happy to hear that energy has continued. It's a beautiful city.
You also touch on another smart and healthy inclination, and you call it the agrosphere. I love that term. Wisconsin, as you know, and remark in the book, is good at that stuff. We just had somebody on the show again last week about the CSAs and the farm-to-table stuff. Do you find that big all over?
Yes. Okay. There's something about the way people are integrating their local food, creating opportunities for people to make local food and finding lovely graphics for the labels of them. And it might seem a little precious to some people. You know, the farmers markets, people joke, they call them the farmers markups. But it was pointed out to me now that there's more organic farming and there are more practices and the more efficient practices, more efficient farming practices in general, people are finding ways to be competitive pricing-wise at farmers markets. And where you can use your benefits, your SNAP cards, formerly known as food stamps, with an automatic discount at farmers markets. So there's all sorts of ways that people are harmonizing the economics of it and also finding the fun of it. You might have local syrups that you can put into your own sodas, or you know, there's tons of distilleries and breweries and wineries, so there's all that fermentation. But also more bread bakers and, yeah, people are really finding that in all 50 states, including, you know, very Neat. Cold ones Neat. Like Alaska.
Well, it's refreshing. I have to think, Dar, that opinions you have about so many things may do wonders for your songwriting. Lyrics may become easier when someone truly believes in or understands something. Is that a fair statement?
Well, it's a chicken and egg thing because, you know, people are like, what book did you, you know, somebody somebody reviewed the book, a customer on one of the things, mm-hmm. and my friend was telling me that she said she didn't give it a good review. She said, well, the thing is, I think somebody would like this book, but I thought it was going to be an autobiography. I didn't really read that title. And so it's like about urban planning. I've always written about sort of this interface between people and either their psyches, going into their psyches, or people going out into the world, and oftentimes sort of where their psyche meets the world and how we find a way to fit in it, and the conflicts and the revelations of that. So it's always been there, and I was sort of shocked to discover that as I went out on the tour talking about it and playing music, that there was a real simpatico. So, yes, I assume that will continue.
This book should be must reading for chambers of commerce and economic development pros, because I think it gives everybody a good idea of how really we can walk hand in hand, because today the climate in America is kind of like we're all taking sides, maybe doing that more than ever. And then along comes Dar with a line like, citizens tend to see past their partisanship and biases when they're trying to accomplish something they cannot do alone. That just kind of says it all. I want to bring up one more town in Wisconsin so that we can puff our chests out again. Madison. You have Madison in the book, and I love the term capitalitis. Tell us about capitalitis and the fact that Madison doesn't have it.
Capitalitis is a virus. That's based on a sort of a beautiful shift or based on something that started as a wonderful thing. We created these beautiful state capitals to be grand and to be palaces of our democracy, to say, yes, we're building this very grand structure, but you're all welcome inside it and you're all welcome to be a part of it. And there are galleries and ways for people to participate. But they wanted them to look gorgeous, so that we could feel proud of this great experiment called democracy. Then they would have these huge grounds around them, acres and acres of lawn. And now what we have in a civic sense, we have large buildings that require upkeep and heating and lighting, and people who go in there from 9 to 5-ish. Restaurants don't want to be really nearby. And huge lawns. They're kind of locked in all sorts of places. There's only one way to go in. You go in, everyone's carrying a gun. They look at your purse. There's a kind of a foreboding isolation to them. There are a lot of state capitals that buck that trend. Nobody bucks it as well as Madison, because you have all of these uses for that plaza around it. And really, I want to say to every state capital, get your farmers markets and your playgrounds and your dog runs and your community gardens and your food pantry garden right there on your property. If you've got lawn, just get rid of the lawn. Nobody goes there. And really find ways to invite people in. And inside, get a disco ball. Get
there you go.
Get your folding chairs. Do things that are multi-purpose. Did you know that some of these buildings are closed 9 months of the year?
Wow.
I mean, that is such a waste of space. And also, it's great to get people in the halls of their own buildings that they're paying taxes for and mm-hmm. saying, these belong to me. Hopefully that translates into, this government belongs to me. Yeah. This government isn't something I just have to point my finger at. This is us with our problems as we, solve them, and solutions that enlighten us. Anyway, Madison, as you know, not only doesn't have that problem of capitalitis, there are great restaurants all around the Capitol, and there's the farmers market and all this stuff. They also have those famous protests of the solidarity singers. I joined one of them, and I believe that shows how when you feel that sense of access and proximity to your state capital, it can invite some actual civic engagement. There's no science to it, but I feel like Madison is a good beacon for us.
Yeah. I wonder how long it's going to be before we have that disco ball in the rotunda. That's a great idea.
I would love, if I made a lot of money on this book, that would be my first gift to all 50 state capitals.
Wow.
A really big disco ball.
We've only been able to touch on some of what it's about. What I found in 1,000 towns, good book, good music, good person. Dar Williams, thanks for being with us on Spectrum West and Wisconsin Public Radio. We look forward to your appearance at the Confluence Arts Center someday.
Thank you. I just have to say, you totally got the spirit of the book, so I'm really grateful.
I've never had a way with women, but the hills of Iowa make me wish that I could. And I've never found a way to say I love you, but if the chance came by, oh, I would. But way back where I come from, we never mean to bother. We don't like to make our passions other people's concern. And we walk in the world of safe people, and at night we walk into our houses and burn.
That's a song called Iowa. She tells the story of how it was inspired when she was traveling on the road and she caught Chapter a Day on Wisconsin Public Radio, and they were talking about Iowa, and she wrote that song just from imagining what Iowa looked like. How cool is that? The book is What I Found in a Thousand Towns, A Traveling Musician's Guide to Rebuilding America's Communities. Dar Williams is her name. I'm not a pushover by any stretch, but I am now a big fan of the singer and the sage, and I'll be in an audience first chance I get. Spectrum Memo tonight, 7:30. This is Thursday. The Mabel Tainter in Menominee presents Lucy and Susie, a mother-daughter songbook. Next Tuesday, the Everly Brothers Experience, MabelTainter.org. Saturday, the L.A. Phillips Library in Eau Claire host creative writing workshops for young people from 10:30 to noon. The Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls welcomes Robert Brewey, New York singer, songwriter, and guitarist. Maybe he knows Dar. Anyway, it's Saturday, 7:30 p.m., For a taste, go to Robert Brewey, that's BRUEY.com. The Chippewa Valley Museum welcomes Three Seasons Treasure Hunters Club to the Schlegel Milk House Saturday from 11 to 3. It's for families and everybody who wants to learn about metal detecting. The State Theater in Eau Claire welcomes the Mavericks next Wednesday. That's the 27th of September. That's at 8 p.m. Lots of good stuff coming up. Gratitude to Becca, Kate, and Dean for support of many varieties. Thank you for lending us your ears and your attention. And finally, happy birthday and congratulations to a big WPR fan, my Aunt Florence, Aunt Flo in Wausau, who turns 100 today. I'm getting dizzy just thinking about that kind of milestone. Happy birthday. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. See you next week.